Primary threat spotted.
Moving into position.
I craved the strength and certainty of steel.
Cadia marks the boundary where reality and unreality meet.
Of course, we didn't expect to die out here. You know, I'm beginning to wish I'd asked for more money.
D20 Radio, where gamers roll. D20Radio.com.
All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls to Squad Tactica. We are back, and it's been a while, but that's okay because we are going to have a lot of fun talking about a lot of different things that have been going on since last time we did the show. So a big shout out before we get on into this to our Patreons. Thank you for so much for sponsoring the show and keeping us going. Keep the lights on, helping get this out to all of the peoples listening to the Emperor's goodness, or, you know, he's not my Emperor. Also a big shout out to our sponsors, Battle Foam. You've got some great foam they just announced. They've got some Magna racks that slide out, so those are really cool. We posted that on Facebook. Big shout out to the Army Painter for sponsoring us. They've got great paints, great brushes, all kinds of great supplies, and to Discount Games Inc. Thank you so much for all of your support. It has been a fantastic year. I know it's been crazy, but the show is a year old as of, I believe, July 20th. So we've actually got a lot of things we're going to talk about here really quickly before we talk about Kill Team, just to kind of celebrate and, you know, kick things off with year two as we go into Kill Team and then Warcry and all kinds of fun stuff. So we've got some very cool prizes that we're going to be giving away to our listeners and our Discord and our Patreons and all kinds of people. So just really quickly, there's going to be a post on Facebook going over how you can win, what you can win, where you can win, but we just want to have a big party and celebrate everyone who's, you know, listened to the show, you know, talk to us on Facebook, talk to us on Discord, and especially celebrate the people who've supported the show. So we have, you can hear it here, I have some of the Kill Team campaign tokens. I've actually, you know, as you all know, I've been playing this since day one, and I've been going to lots of events around the state of Texas, and I did Adepticon. We're going to go to Nova. So I've been going to a lot of events. I've been winning tokens and prizes and saving them for this event. So we are going to be giving away the Kill Team campaign acrylic tokens, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and I've got both factors. I've got the eye. I'm probably wrong, but one's dark and one's light. One is, like, I think it's the Eye of Horus, and the other one is the Kill Team skull token logo. And then we've also got full sets of the tactic cards. So you have Gritted Teeth, Insane Bravery, Decisive Strike, Tactical Reroll, Decisive Shot, Decisive Move. So we've got sets of all six of those cards. And then we have the full campaign set. So you have, like, your Stim Shot, More Bullets, Custom Ammo, and then these are all the level one tactics on top of your Decisive Strike, Tactical Reroll, blah, 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 blah. They have different artwork. They say the Kill Team campaign, where the six that I just talked about, the Gritted Teeth, the standard tactics, they have a different card backing, and they have a little bit different artwork. So we've got multiple sets of Kill Team prize support that we're going to be giving away. So we'll, like I said, we'll announce on Facebook all the information, all the stuff you need to know, but we are going to be celebrating by giving away all the stuff for free, as long as you live in the United States, because I talked to my local post office about shipping to the UK, and they said it would cost like $80. So if you want to pay for the shipping, you're more than welcome to, but, you know, it's probably not worth your time. But we're going to be shipping all of these prizes throughout the United States for free. And like I said, check out the Facebook page for information on that. Secondly, we are going to be hosting our very first convention through Squad Tactica. Now, this is going to be a very different style of convention because you're probably thinking, okay, where do I go? When is it? How much is it going to cost? All that stuff. So we've been talking on the Discord. I'm going to plug the Discord. You know, if you haven't joined it, you definitely should. It's free. It's a lot of fun. We've got competitive talk, casual talk, work. We're talking a lot about Warcry right now because it's really hot. And, of course, the new Demon release. But, you know, it's a lot of fun. We have a lot of great people. Anyways, we are going to have our first convention that is tentatively called Pajamas and Paintbrushes, and this is going to be a stay-at-home convention over a weekend. Sometime we're looking at probably November, and you might be thinking to yourself, what does that mean? So this is going to be a very different kind of convention. I'm not sure if it's the first of its kind, but in this instance of miniatures, I couldn't find anything else like it. So the reason it's called Pajamas and Paintbrushes is we are going to take 3 days over the course of a weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, you know, Friday after work, all Saturday, and then probably, you know, a majority of Sunday until like the mid-afternoon, maybe like 4 or 5 in the evening. And we are just going to paint miniatures. We're going to have a chat room where people can hang out and talk throughout the entire course of the weekend. We're going to have different community members hosting free panels, free classes. I mean, they might choose to charge for them, but at this point, everything right now is free. And essentially, it's going to be exactly the same setup as a convention. You know, hey, we're going to have someone talk about painting, and we're going to have someone talk about dry brushing, we're going to have someone talk about airbrushing. And they're going to have a set section of time, and you just have to join either their Discord channel and, you know, listen to them on their voice chat or watch them on Twitch or join their Google Hangout or whatever. So we're going to have this list of events that's going on that people can hang out and join. We're going to have an ability where you can post photographs onto the Facebook page of the stuff that you're working on. So basically, the idea is you get to enjoy a community event from the comfort of your home in your pajamas. So, you know, you don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to pay for parking. You don't have to pay for food. But there's still going to be a huge community. We're going to be hanging out and talking. You know, we might do streams amongst ourselves in Discord. There's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of options. We haven't nailed down all the details, but we have nailed down the idea that we're going to celebrate miniatures and painting. And it's not just Kill Team stuff. You could do Legion, you could do Flames of War. It's just a weekend to sit down and paint, because all of us admit that we have a problem that we just don't have the time, we don't have the capacity, and it's not really fun to paint by yourself. And then we kind of had this idea, hey, wait a minute, what if we all just did it from home and we can talk and hang out digitally? All of our best equipment is at home. You're more comfortable. You're set up. You've got all of your paints. You know, you don't have to get up and go anywhere, but you still get that, you know, community experience. We have some people who are brand new saying, hey, I need some help. The rest of us are like, hey, you know, send us some photographs. We'll be more than happy to help you. I've got a streaming setup, so I might do some streaming or even do like, you know, supplementary classes where it's like, hey, you know, here's like your fundamental, you know, edge highlighting. Here's your fundamental, you know, this, that, and the other. I mean, like we could do a full model over the course of a day as a class, you know, like, here's what it looks like, you know, once you've hit it with your base coat paint, let it dry for an hour or two, and then we'll come back and start doing your base coat colors and things. I mean, like, the idea for Pajamas and Paintbrushes, which is a tentative name, it's just a convention that is free. It's available to anyone, anywhere in the entire world. You've got 3 days where you can, you know, paint as much as you want. If you only can paint a few hours and join us, that's fine. If you want to take all 3 days and join us, that's fine. There's probably going to be giveaways. I'm not sure what all the details are, but the point is we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to paint a lot of models, and it's going to be a blast. So everyone who's listening is definitely invited to hang out, and we'll post more information on the Facebook page about that. But these are just big, exciting things that we're going to be doing to celebrate not only the last year of Kill Team, but this amazing community that we've built up throughout the course of the year with Squad Tactica and each and every one of you. So yeah, it's a blast, and I'm really, really excited about what not only the end of 2019 is going to look like, but what 2020 is going to look like. All right, so since our last episode, which was many, many moons ago, almost a month ago from today, we had a big announcement from the Warhammer community webpage, which was like a week ago, that Chaos Demons are actually going to come to Kill Team, and this is kind of expected. I'm surprised it took them a year to get these guys onto the table, but it makes sense. People on the Discord were saying, you know, Games Workshop needs to have content for White Dwarf. They don't just want to dump everything out on the very first go and then they have nothing to print. So it makes sense. However, demons are kind of a critical aspect of the Warhammer 40K universe because, you know, these are the bad guys. You know, you've got Chaos Space Marines and other things, but realistically, like, the Chaos Demons are like the bad guys. These are the problems that the Emperor is trying to stop, and they're pretty, you know, it'd be like Mickey Mouse not having Goofy or Minnie Mouse. Like, to me, the Chaos Demons are pretty standard choice of model when you come, like, if I'm explaining the game to someone, it would be really weird if it's like, well, you know, the Emperor is protecting the universe from, you know, the Chaos Warp and the demons coming through, and they're like, well, can I play as those demons? Well, no, because they don't exist yet in the rules. Like, you know, it, for me, it was like, where, especially when the rulebook said there were demon keyword abilities, like, it's like, hey, if you encounter a demon model, do this thing. There's no demon models. So anyways, it's very exciting. We have demons. I don't play them. I don't really care, but they have some interesting abilities and things that we're actually going to go over. So for those of you who are listening, this information came out in July's White Dwarf, so you can go pick it up at your local friendly game shop and take a look if you are a demon player. If you're not, I'm going to read a lot of the information so you can be prepared if you're going to any kind of competitive tournament. Because I actually think there is a possibility that these models could be fairly competitive, at least thematic. This is probably an army. Like I said, I don't play demons, but if I did, I would definitely play them in a campaign mission just because of how cool some of their abilities are. All right, so let's take a look here at the model profiles I'm reading out of my White Dwarf here. Now, I'm not going to go over every single profile because, for example, the Bloodletter has four. You've got the Bloodletter, the Bloodletter Icon Bearer, the Bloodletter Hornblower, and the Blood Reaper, and it's just too much. Like, if you're interested, you can deep dive and, you know, get your own copy of the White Dwarf and look at these. But we're going to go over the basic fundamentals, and that way you understand what you're getting into if you're going to play them or if you're going to play against them. So right off the bat, and we're going to obviously talk about point values and things probably at the end, but we'll talk about the tactics. These are very interesting, not too different from the other tactics we've seen in other factions. A lot of them, as always, kind of are an amalgamation of different things from different factions. So we'll just read through them and, you know, you can make your own determination. But first one is Reality Blinks. This is a tactic that states, use this tactic when a Chaos Demon model that is not a horror from your kill team is taken out of action. Roll a d6 on a 4+. That injury roll is ignored and the model is restored to 1 wound for 3 command points. So it's kind of like Death Denied, except you just come back to 1 wound instead of taking a flesh wound. It is 3 command points, so it's kind of a trade where Death Denied is you take 2 command points, you don't die, but you take an additional flesh wound, so those stack up and make your model worse. Reality Blinks is just like a reset. You come back with 1 wound, which most of your models only have 1 wound, and you have no more flesh wounds. So for 3 command points, you basically get a brand new model. It's really expensive, but, you know, if you have 3 command points sitting around, it's not too bad. I like it. It's just, you know, it's a very situational tactic. Next one is Warp Spawned Terror. Use this tactic at the start of the morale phase. Add 1 to nerve tests for enemy models that are within 3 inches of any Chaos Demon models from your kill team for 2 command points. So, you know, helps your nerve tests, blah, blah, blah. Next one is Cleaving Blow. Use this tactic when you pick a Bloodletter model from your kill team to attack in the fight phase. Add 1 to the damage characteristic of that model's Hellblade until the end of the phase. This tactic is 1 command point, and let's take a quick look at the Hellblade weapon profile. So it is range melee, type melee, strength user, and then it's an AP -3, damage 1 with the ability. Any attack with a wound roll of 6+ for this weapon has a damage characteristic of 2 instead of 1. And then your standard Bloodletter here is weapon skill 3, ballistic skill 3, 1 attack. So essentially for 1 command point, you turn your 1 attack, you go 3 to hit, and then you're looking at your strength 4, so you're an MEQ. So on average, it's 3 to hit, 4 to wound, and if you roll a 6, it's a damage characteristic of 2, AP negative 3. If you use the cleaving blow, it would be a damage characteristic of 3 instead of 2. Now, of course, this is all mathing if you roll a 6. So standard damage is 1. Using the cleaving blow tactic makes it damage 2. And if you roll a 6, it's damage 3, AP negative 3. So it is kind of risky. The nice thing is it's not, you know, 2 command points. 1 command point to give you plus 1 damage is great. Not against Necrons, of course. But if you're going up against something, say you're playing Elites, and you're going up against, you know, a multi-wound model, this is a really good way to punch through them, especially if you're going up against something that's like Terminator and they've got that 2-up armor save. Even if you deal 1 damage, like you don't use the cleaving blow, that AP negative 3 pushes their 2-up armor to a 5-up armor, so they're probably going to take, if they're running a storm shield, of course, they're probably going to take their 3-up invulnerable save, because why wouldn't you? So that, like, 1 command point could potentially force your opponent to do things you want them to do. It just depends on the matchup. But cleaving blow is not bad. I like it. One command point for 1 damage is actually pretty gross. Is it competitive? It really depends on the profile. But the nice thing is you have the capacity to make your bloodletters increase their damage just for a command point, and, you know, pressure your opponent to do things, you know, maybe spend command points to keep their models alive. So let's move along to Pestilential Aura. This is a Plague Bearer tactic, obviously. I use this tactic at the start of any battle round. Pick 1 Plague Bearer model from your kill team. If that model is obscured, attacks that target this model suffer an additional -1 modifier to their hit rolls until the end of the battle round for 1 command point. So essentially, this is kind of like a 1 command point to make it harder to hit your model by 1. So that's really good. I mean, for those of you who don't know, Plague Bearers are Nurgle, so that means they have Feel No Pain and a 5-up invuln save, or, you know, Disgustingly Resilient, whatever you want to call it. So if they're obscured, it's -1 to hit. If you use the aura, it's another -1 to hit. It's -2 to hit. If they're long range, it's -3 to hit. If you do hit and you do wound, they get a 5-up invuln on top of a 5-up Feel No Pain. So it just makes these models really, really great for sitting on objectives, because you sit them on an objective, you make sure they're obscured, and then you just tank all day long, and your opponent has to sink a lot of shots into these models to hit them and then to kill them, because, like I said, you know, when you've got a 5-up and a 5++, or if you've got a 5++ and a 5, you know, it's just ridiculously hard to kill models. I know people are like, well, but it's a 5-up. Yeah, it's true, but you get to roll 2 dice. You can still re-roll it with tactical re-roll. You know, one of those will probably hit a 5 or a 6 just because you get to roll twice. Like, it's really hard to kill Plague Bearer models. From experience, it's just, they're tanky. So the ability to give one, or to use a command point to make them one harder to hit, it just makes your opponent's life miserable. Because think about this. If your opponent is even a Space Marine running a 3-up, regular 3-up, if you're obscured, you're a 4-up. If you use the Pestilential Aura, you're a 5-up. And then if you're long range, you're probably not, but if you are, you're a 6-up. Going from a 3-up to a 5-up is evil. That's just gross. And for 1 command point, that is a pretty gross thing. Once again, it's not something you use every single time, but I mean, the crazy thing about the Pestilential Aura is it's for the entire round. It's not for one shot. It's not like, oh, when a model shoots me, I get to use this aura and give myself a -1 for that singular shot. It's for the entire battle round. So for 1 command point, you just basically give yourself an extra bubble of protection. So, you know, we all know Kill Team is very, very objective-oriented, so being able to set a Plague Bearer on a point, make sure they're obscured, and then pop this off every once in a while, maybe turns 3 and 4 when your opponent is actually really close, that's really nasty. And, you know, that could mean wins. That could mean the victory points that you need. It's situational, but it's still very usable. All right, moving along to Mutating Fire. When you use this tactic when you pick a horror model from your kill team to attack in the shooting phase. Until the end of the phase, change the armor-piercing characteristic of this model's Consecrating Flames to -3 for one command point. Let's take a look at those flames here. It's a ranged weapon, 18 inches, assault 2, strength user, AP 0, damage 1, ability nothing. And horrors have a ballistic skill of 4. So, this is one of those situational ability where you're shooting 2 shots, you hit on a 4 up, if there's no negative modifiers, you deal 1 damage, but, for one command point, turning your AP to -3 is gross. The problem is you have to hit and you have to wound. So, I don't know. This is one of the ones that I'm just kind of like, maybe not. I don't know. This is not the one that impresses me the most. I'll say it like that. And then the final tactic is a Deadly Dance. This is probably my favorite. This is use this tactic before making a charge roll for a Demonette model in your kill team. You can roll 3d6 and pick which 2 rolls to use when determining this model's charge distance in this battle round for 1 command point. It's really good. If you've never done that before, go ahead and roll 3 dice and then pick the top 2 and you'll be like, oh, this is really good. this ability makes the Demonettes much more consistent. Clearly the Demonettes are meant to be in melee combat, so this is a lot better than, this is a lot better than a lot of abilities because you get to roll multiple dice and pick the best value. And then on top of that, if you just don't like all 3 of those dice, you could spend an additional command point to reroll the 3 and you still get to pick the top 2. So there is a lot of flexibility here with this tactic. You don't need to use it all the time, but if you have a distance that's, I don't know, I would say probably over 8 inches where you really need to get that charge off, this one command point can make your dice roll insanely more consistent. Now, I don't guarantee anything's going to happen, but the odds of getting, the number you need out of 3 dice and picking the top 2 is much higher than rolling 2 dice and that's all you get. So the tactics here are very good. They have a lot of flexibility. You've got consistency with the Deadly Dance. You've got sustainability with the Pestilential Aura. If you have 3 command points, which is very rare for me, but I've seen a lot of players who are much more conservative with their points, you could use Reality Blinks to keep a key model alive. I don't really care about Warp Spawn Terror, the one that has the morale phase nerve checks. Your nerves, your leadership here is like 7. It's 7 across the board, so it's not super great. It's not super bad. Like, you're not, I don't know, 7 is just kind of average. You're not leadership 10 like the Necrons. You're just like, okay, I just pass everything all the time because I'm a robot. And it's 2 command points for that, so, I don't know about this. But there's a lot of flexibility here in the tactics that I think will make the demons really fun to play. So let's move along to actually look at the model profile and see what on earth do these things do. So first up is the classic, the ever-enduring, the Bloodletter. This is a 6-inch movement, weapon skill, ballistic skill, 3 up, strength 4, toughness 3, wounds 1, attacks 1, leadership 7, 6 up, armor save. That does change if you go to the Blood Reaper, who is the sergeant. You just get 1 more attack. So across the board, you're almost a marine, kind of. You have the 6-inch move, the 3 up, weapon skill, ballistic skill. It's your toughness where you kind of eat a point here because you're toughness 3 instead of toughness 4. But you are, let's see, Bloodletters are 7 points. So, hey, a regular Space Marine is 12. So, one toughness point for 5 points per model seems pretty good. Considering you could put 2 of these down for 14 points versus 1 Space Marine for 12. And these would probably give that Space Marine a run for its money. Just saying. Anywho, we'll take a look at the abilities. They're demonic. Everything is demonic, so they all have a 5-up invulnerable save. Every model has a 5-up invulnerable save. So guess what? you have invulnerable saves, which is really nice because there's a lot of AP weapons that just crush armor saves really rough. You have an unstoppable ferocity, which states you can add 1 to the attacks and strength characteristics of a model with this ability in a battle round in which they charged. So in a nutshell, they have the zealot specialism just kind of built in, which is interesting because if you look at their options, they have the leader, the comms, combat, and veteran. So you could give the bloodletters a veteran move, and then they have the zealot specialism just kind of built in where, well, it is a little different, but essentially when you charge into combat, you get +1 attack, +1 strength. So you're looking at 2 attacks, strength 5. So on average, like if you look against an MEQ, your weapon skill is a 3 up, so it's 3 to hit, and then your strength 5 versus their toughness 4, so it's a 3 to wound, and then you have damage 1. If you roll a 6 on the wound, you have damage 2. So this is kind of where you get to the point where that tactic comes into play, and the ability to pump up your damage could be very potent because you're swinging in on 3s, and your opponent has to deal with that. Plus, if you have an AP negative 3, which you do, you know, say you're looking at a Space Marine, they're rolling an armor save on a 6. So that's pretty gross for 7 points built into a model. So clearly your Bloodletter and your Demonettes are meant to be aggressive melee units where you're going to run them into your opponent and start punching them down, trying to stick flesh wounds on them and make them less efficient, or just flat out kill them. You also have some upgrades you can take. You have the Icon of Khorne, where you can reroll charge rolls for Bloodletters within 6 inches of any friendly models equipped with this, and that includes themselves. And then you have the Instrument of Khorne, add 1 to advance, and charge rolls made for Bloodletters within 6 inches of anybody who is equipped with this. You know, this is your stock, between the Bloodletter and the Demonette, this is your stock, you know, melee unit. You're going to run these models down the table, you're going to punch them into your opponent, and make them suffer. Now, once again, you do have the 5-up invulnerable save, but that's not super reliable compared to models that have like a 3-up. So they're squishy, but they're cheap. So I think these are fairly well-costed models. They might be a little under-costed, but I mean, you know, they get the job done. These are going to probably, if you're not careful, they can get shot off the table. So you have to be very, very careful on how you maneuver them around. Because once they get into melee combat, they're probably going to be fine. It's that turn 1 and turn 2 that you're trying to keep them out of lines of fire so that your opponent can just put free pot shots into them. And then you, like, the more dice you roll to save models, the higher the odds are that you're going to fail. So, for example, if your model isn't shot at turn 1 and isn't shot at turn 2 and it gets into melee combat turn 3, and then you know, your opponent does some damage to it, and then you roll some dice for the invulnerable save, that's a lot better than turn 1, you get shot, and you roll a die to see if you save, and then turn 2, you get shot, and you roll another die to see if you get saved, and then you go into the melee. Like, the more dice you roll, one of those is going to fail, and your model is going to get taken off the table, or it's going to take a flesh wound to get worse. So you want to keep models like this that are squishy out of line of sight. You want to make sure your opponent can't get shots off of them, or minimize the number of shots, so that way those 7 points can, you know, you could stretch them to be as efficient as humanly possible. You really just don't want to put 7 points into a model on the table, run it down the field with no cover, no obscurity, your opponent shoots it off the table, and you're like, oh, what happened? This model is super bad, I don't understand. Well, the more shots they get, the more dice you roll, the higher the probability is one of those will fail and your model will die. So Bloodletters and Demonettes need to stay out of line of sight, they need to be quick, they need to be sneaky, and you need to put pressure on your opponent so that they're not capturing objectives and you're forcing them to go into, you know, specific lanes so that you can capitalize on their mistakes. And, you know, using Bloodletters and Demonettes, you have to be aggressive, but you have to be smart about them. All right, moving on, we are going to talk about the Demonette models. Same thing as the Bloodletters. You've got Demonette, Demonette Icon Barrier, Demon Hornblower, and Allurus. That is the Sergeant that just gives you 1 additional attack. So the standard profile is 7-inch movement, weapon skill, ballistic skill, 3 up. Strength, toughness, 3s. So we're looking at a Imperial Guardsmen here with strength, toughness 3, so they're squishier. Weapon or wounds 1, attacks 2, leadership 7, armor save 6 up, so t-shirt save as always. But they are also demonic, so they have an invulnerable save of 5 up, so you know, you're probably going to roll that every single time, because why would you roll a 6 up? You have Quicksilver Swiftness. This is a really cool ability that states a model with this ability can be chosen to fight in the Hammer of Wrath section of the fight phase, even if they have not charged in that battle round. So what does that mean? Well, traditionally, when you charge a model, it's kind of like when you ready a model in the shooting phase. So if your model charges my model, when we get to the fight phase, there's the Hammer of Wrath, where all of the models that charged go first, and then the regular phase where everyone who's left gets to fight in the fight phase. So demonettes get to go first every single round they're in melee combat. So if they charged, they automatically get to go first, but if they didn't charge, they still get to go first. And that's pretty gross, because that's just a passive ability. There's a lot of abilities out there where you have to pay a command point to go first. And this is not the same as Decisive Strike. Decisive Strike says you get to pick a model to attack first. This is kind of like that. So let me put it like this. When you use Decisive Strike, your model just flat out goes first at the start of the fight round. When you have demonettes with Quicksilver Swiftness, all of them naturally go, they get to go first in the melee phase alongside any other models that have Hammer of Wrath. So if you didn't charge and you have 5 demonettes, all of them have a activation, you could say, in the Hammer of Wrath phase. But your opponent also gets to activate their models during the Hammer of Wrath phase if they charged or have some kind of special ability like the Demonette that states they get to go in the Hammer of Wrath section instead of the regular section. So it's kind of like it's a worse version of Decisive Strike, but all of your Demonettes have it. They just don't get to be like necessarily the first model unless you are the first player. And Demonette models come in at 7 points, just like the Bloodletter. So you're looking at very, very cost-effective melee units, because both of these are 7 points. Your Bloodletters are going to be doing a lot of the punching, and your Demonettes are going to be getting into combat more consistently because of the tactic, and then they're going to be going first. So both of these models have different applications. Bloodletters are much better at punching through heavy weapons models. Like if you've got a model that's got a very low armor save, they've got multiple wounds, they've got a lot of, you know, you've got big threats on the table. Say you're playing elites and you come against like a Bulgrin or an Ogryn, you know, those things are tough. They don't have nearly as good of save profiles as a Terminator, but they're still beefy as all get out. You probably want to use the Bloodletter because you can charge in, you get that strength 5, 2 attacks. You know, if you roll 6s, you're doing 2 damage. You can do up to 3 damage, AP negative 3. That is very difficult to deal with for big tanky models. The Demonettes are much more consistent at getting down the field because they have that extra 1 inch on their profile for movement. You can also use the tactic that lets you roll 3 dice and pick up the 2 highest dice. They're running Piercing Claws, which, let's take a look here. If I'm not mistaken, they have a similar ability to the Hellblade. It's melee, strength is user, so strength 3, so not as good. AP negative 1, damage 1, but each time you roll a wound, roll of 6 up for this weapon, that hit is resolved at AP negative 4 instead of AP negative 1. So the Bloodletters are really good at punching through heavy AP, dealing a lot of damage. The Demonettes are really good at, if you roll a 6, punching through armor saves, or just completely nullifying armor saves. Both of them have different uses. The Demonettes also have the same thing. They have an Icon of Slaanesh and an Instrument of Slaanesh. Icon of Slaanesh says if you make a wound roll of a 6-up for an attack made by a Demonette while they're still within 6 inches of anybody equipped with this thing, that attack inflicts 1 mortal wound in addition to its normal damage, and the Icon of Slaanesh is 5 points. Ooh, that's expensive. Then you have the instrument. Add one to advance charge rolls for demonettes within 6 inches of the model equipped with this. So I like the bloodletters a little bit more than the demonettes, just because they have such a higher threshold for aggression for the same point cost. They've got a natural AP -3. If you roll a 6, they have damage 2. And if you don't roll a 6, you could just say, okay, you know, forget that. I'm going to just spend 1 CP, and they're going to deal 2 damage per attack. Plus, if they charge, like I said, they have that Zealot ability kitted into them, so they get plus 1 attack, plus 1 strength. So, I mean, think about it. If you're charging in, you have 2 attacks. You're hitting on 3s, probably wounding on 3s. You naturally have AP -3. You could pop a command point, so you're dealing 2 damage, you know, and one of those is probably going to get through at AP -3. And as long as it's not a Necron, you're probably going to kill something, because rolling 2 dice on the injury chart is gross. I mean, there's and then if you just don't kill them outright, you could always spend 1 more command point to tactical reroll and more than likely just flat out kill something. So it's tricky, because, like, the demonettes aren't bad. They do get to go first, but they just... My problem with the demonettes is their strength toughness 3. Like, the strength 3 is really, really bad, and there's no way to buff that. It doesn't matter if you go first. It's just one of those things where you need to hit models, you need to wound models, and strength 3, just naturally, you're at a disadvantage. So your weapon skill is a 3 up, so it's a 3 up to hit. Your strength 3 is going to be against majority of models or toughness 4, so you're looking at a 3 to hit, a 5 to wound, which is bad. Like, that's really, really bad. And you do have 2 attacks base, but still, you're probably only going to get 1 through, so it's 3 to hit, 5 to wound. If you roll a 6, you're AP -4, but you're still damage 1. You do have a longer movement profile and the ability to roll 3 dice at the cost of a CP. I don't think they're bad. I just think the bloodletters are better. If the demonette was like a point less, that might change my mind. But the problem is they're both 7 points, and you automatically compare them for what you're getting. Like, hey, I'm getting 7 points out of a bloodletter. I'm getting, you know, strength 4. That's better than strength 3. On the charge, I get strength 5, 2 attacks. Demonettes have 2 attacks already, but, you know, once again, strength 3. It's just math. You kind of have to figure out which is better, and I think the bloodletters are better. I could be wrong. It doesn't really matter. I'm not going to be playing them, but between these two, those are the profiles for your aggressive team comps, where you're going to be pushing these models down the table, getting into your opponent's face, and just trying to get wounds on those models as fast as humanly possible. All right, moving along, we have the Plague Bearers. These are probably going to be the easiest models to talk about. So you have the Plague Bearer, the Plague Bearer Icon Bearer, the Plague Bearer Hornblower, and the Plague Ridden, which is, again, your standard sergeant that has 2 attacks. So everything else is exactly the same. You have a 5-inch movement profile, weapon skill, ballistic skill 4, strength, toughness 4, wounds 1, attacks 1, leadership 7, armor save 6. You're demonic, so you have a 5-up invulnerable save, but you're disgustingly resilient, so you have a 5++++, feel no pain. You have the icon of Nurgle, subtract 1 from leadership of any model within 6 inches of this guy, holding the icon, and then the instrument of Nurgle, add 1 to advance and charge rolls for plague bearers with, you know, 6 inches of this model, blah, blah, blah. These are basically your standard tanks. You're going to set them on objectives. They're going to be super duper duper hard to kill. And how many points are plague bearers? 8 points. Woo! Nope, 7. Everything is 7? Oh, horrors. Horrors are more expensive. Woo. So plague bearers, yeah, they're all 7 points. You're, except for the leader, they're going to be 8, but probably don't take that guy. Well, maybe you do, actually. This might be the model you take to be your leader, because they're much, much tougher to kill. You do have that toughness 4, which is very relevant. You know, having a T4 means, on average, people need 4s to wound you, which is better than 3s to wound you, because most everything hits on 3s nowadays. So being able to save yourself a little bit of trouble and going from a 66% chance of taking a wound to a 50% chance, Hey, 16% is 16%. I'll take that. So for 7 points, you have a super tanky model that has a 5-up, a 5-up-up, and then you can spend one command point to make them one negative one to hit. So if they're obscured, that's a negative two to hit. If they hit you with comms, which removes the obscurity bonus, you still get the negative one to hit because the tactic procs at the start of the battle round. So this is one of those nice things where if you're playing against models that have comms, like Tau, for example, because you use the tactic at the start of the battle round, it states pick one plague bearer. If this model is obscured, attacks that target this model suffer an additional negative one to their hit. Oh, it doesn't work like that. Ah, bummer. Well, actually, hold on. If this model is obscured, which you are, attacks that target this model suffer an additional negative one modifier, but comms removes the obscurity bonus, so you wouldn't be obscured, so this wouldn't proc. Okay, so it's not as good as I thought. I thought this gave you the negative one modifier just at the start of the battle round, but it procs if you're counted as being obscured. So you do have to be aware that models that use the comms ability can neutralize that command point, so don't spend it recklessly. But even still, you have a 5-up invuln and a 5++ feel no pain, so you're still hard to kill. There's not too much more to talk about them. They're slower than everybody else because, you know, that's a Nurgle thing. You're slower on the movement, but you're tougher in your toughness. So, you know, everyone's toughness 3, your toughness 4. You know, there's not, like I said, there's not much to plague bears. You just move them onto the field, they sit on objectives, and they're super duper hard to kill. They come with a plague sword, which, you know, okay, it's strength U, AP 0, damage 1, you can reroll wound rolls of 1, but you probably don't want this model to get into melee combat if you can avoid it. Alright, so that is pretty much the end for the Plague Bearer model profile. Like I said, they're really not good at anything particularly. They don't have a shooting profile. Their melee profile is a plague sword, which is not very good. So the reality is the Plague Bearers are there to be tanky models that sit on top of objectives, score you victory points. They're batteries, so you can probably use them as leaders to sit in the backfield, gain you command points, gain you objective points. They've got the 5-up invuln, the 5-up-up, disgustingly resilient. If you're playing with elites rules and you have the deep strike capacity, you might want to be using these guys to sit on objectives in the backfield, because if you make them obscure, you can pop the tactic, which gives them the ability to be harder to hit. There's just a lot of things the Plague Bearers are good at in terms of defensive capacity, which is good because you know, you don't want an all offensive army, because you do need models that are able to sit and capture objectives, which the Plague Bearers are going to be very good at. Also, their counterparts, the Horrors, are kind of the same thing. They're built to be very good defensively because of the split mechanic, which I think is incredibly interesting. So for the sake of time, there's a lot of horror profiles. So we're going to say the pink horror icon bearer, pink horror horn blower, and iridescent blower. Those are all the same model. It's exactly the same as like the bloodletters, the demonettes, and the plague bearers. It's pink horror. Your icon bearer and horn blower can take a special icon of Tzeentch or instrument of Tzeentch, and then your iridescent horror is your leader, which gives you just plus one attack. And then you have a blue horror model profile, and then there is a model profile for a model called Pair of Brimstone Horrors. It is a singular model, even though the name says pair. So when you hear that, don't think you're getting two models. It is a physical model that just has the name pair inside of it. So don't get, you know, confused. Now, the split ability says, do not make any injury rolls for any of the horror models. And I'm doing this for the sake of time because it lists every single one. I don't want to say them all because it's a mouthful. So do not make an injury roll for any horror models. This model is instead automatically taken out of action when reduced to 0 wounds. The following rules apply when one of these models is taken out of action. So the pink horror profile states, whenever one of the pink horror models is taken out of action, you can set up 2 blue horrors within 1 inch of the slain model before it is removed. If these models cannot be set up, the ability has no effect. A blue horror has no weapons or equipment. When a blue horror when a blue horror model is taken out of action, you can replace it with a model with a singular Pair of Brimstone Horrors model. A Pair of Brimstone Horrors model has no weapon or equipment. If any of the pink horror models are specialists and taken out of action, the blue horrors that are set up are not specialists. And then blue horrors and pair of brimstone horror models are never considered to have charged in the battle round in which they are set up, and they are not treated as part of your kill team for the purpose of determining if your kill team is broken, and they are not treated as friendly models for the purpose of nerve tests. So let's take a look at the profiles and see what happens. So you have your pink horror models, which are movement 6, weapon skill, ballistic skill 4, strength toughness 3, wounds 1, attack 1, leadership 7, armor save 6. When one of them dies, you get a blue horror, which has movement 6, weapon skill 4, ballistic skill dash, so they can't shoot anything. They have strength 2, toughness 3, wounds 1, attacks 1, leadership 7, armor save 6. And then when the blue horror dies, you get a pair of brimstone horrors, which is a 6 up or a 6 inch movement, 4 up, weapon skill dash, ballistic skill 1, strength 1, toughness 3, wounds 1, attacks 2, leadership 7, armor save 6. The pink horror is armed with consecrating. I don't know, I'm probably saying this wrong. Consecrating flame. So this is a 18 inch range assault 2, which we talked about earlier. So this is a really interesting model profile. And like I said earlier, this is a 12 point model. So here's what you're getting. You're getting a model that's pretty bad at everything. You're not great. If you punch someone, if you go into melee, you're attacking with your fists, which is basically strength 3, AP 0, damage 1. So your horrors for 12 points are doing a couple of interesting things in terms of utility. So your shooting phase is really bad. Now, I guess we should probably talk about this too. So you have a couple things. You have an invulnerable save of 4+. Blue horrors have an invulnerable save of 5. And the pair of brimstone horror model has an invulnerable save of 6. So you have the best invulnerable save of all the demon models. However, as you split, it gets worse and worse by 1. The icon of Tzeentch says at the start of your turn in the psychic phase, roll a d6 for each model from your kill team equipped with the icon of Tzeentch. On a 6, inflict 1 mortal wound on the closest enemy within 12 inches of the model. And then the instrument of Tzeentch, same thing, add 1 to advance rolls and charge rolls, blah, blah, blah. These models are psychers. So this is a very interesting thing you can deal with. Because if you have the icon of Tzeentch at the start of your turn in the psychic phase, you get to use the icon, and then as a psyker, the model can attempt to manifest 1 psychic power in the psychic phase, and it knows Psybolt. So 12 points gets you this weird model profile where you're not great at shooting, and you're not great at melee, but you do get your Psybolt shot, which can be very devastating if you take an icon of Tzeentch, which happens to be 3 points, which, you know, a 15 point model is expensive, but you would potentially get the icon of Tzeentch shot off, which on a 6 you do a mortal wound, and then you get your Psybolt shot, which could do a potentially another mortal wound that could be powerful. But the reality of the pink horrors and the horrors in general is these models stay around for a really long time, because when you have a pink horror and you kill it, you get 2 blue horrors, and then you kill those 2 blue horrors and they each turn into a pair of brimstone horrors. So 12 points actually gives you access to 5 models, which is nuts. That is incredibly insane. Now, do know your toughness is garbage. I mean, your toughness 3, you do have that 4 up invulnerable save with the pink, and then the 5 up with the blue, and then the 6 up with the pair of brimstone horrors, so you still have that invuln save. It does get worse and worse and worse as you go, but as we've talked about in the Discord channel, these models were like built to score objectives it's almost better that you take a couple pink horrors, run them down the field, throw some Psybolts into your opponent, let them die, and then when they turn into blue horrors, you run them into objectives and you just sit on them, because as soon as the blue horror dies, you get another pair. It turns into a pair of brimstone horror model. I really hate the fact that they called it pair of brimstone horrors when it's a literal singular model, but whatever. It's super confusing. But still, your pink horror turns into two blues, which turns into two brimstone. And sure, your profile might be trash with strength 2, strength 1, but in a game that's so built around objective scoring, having the ability to have 5 models in built into 1 is just gross. In fact, it might at some point be worth it to not kill the pink horror, because you're giving your opponent more resources to play with. Which, you know, if you think about, if your opponent, say you know, you're paying 100 points, your opponent brings 3 pink horrors. If you kill all 3 of them, now you have to deal with 6 more models. That is not good in an objective-based game, because they can just sit those models on points. They can charge into you, so they could send a couple models and charge you and lock you down for a turn while the other couple models go score objectives. They can use their plague bearers to sit on objectives and use their blue horrors to try and lock you down. In arena, that's even grosser, because they can sit in hallways and make it so you have to charge them to get past them. This is just a really interesting mechanic that gives the demon player so much flexibility if your opponent kills the pink horror, because you're going from 1 model to 2 models, and they still have a 5-up invulnerable save. So, you know, they're not just going to get, you know, stepped on and squished like if you're playing Gellerpox, where you just instantly die. I would actually love it if Gellerpox got this ability where your curse mites could turn into smaller bugs that were like, you know, strength 1, toughness 1, but you still had more things flying around the table. I really like the split ability. It's very interesting, because you get weaker as you split. But because the game is so built around objective control and board control, that's not a bad thing. In fact, it's a good thing for you, because you're going to be using your bloodletters and your demonettes to get in your opponent's face. And, you know, you probably throw a pink horror or two down the table, and now your opponent has to look at that and go, do I really want to kill that model? Because if I do, they get 2 models, and then I have to deal with that. it's a really unique ability. I kind of hope this comes to more things in the future, although I doubt it will. This is probably going to be like the demon's special gimmick thing, where, hey, they can split into multiple models. And they're psychers, which is just really, really gross. I think that the horror model profile is just insanely good. I don't know if it's broken, but the fact is you get 12 points for essentially 5 models. You don't get any flesh wounds, but that's also not a bad thing, because you're always hitting at 100%, so you'll never be at weapon skill 4 plus 2 flesh wounds, so you're hitting on, like, you're always at weapon skill 4 forever. The flexibility, like, you could do suicide pink horrors, where you just run them into your opponent and they have to kill them, or they're going to get hit with psi bolts to the face. Man, this is just really fun. I like it. Okay, so that's the entire profile for the demons. You know, without playing them, without having seen them played, with just talking to people over the Discord and reading these for myself in the White Dwarf, I think they're good. There's a couple things. Their point cost is low, which is good. These could have been heavily overcosted. You could have had a horror sitting at 15 points, even 18 points. Your bloodletters, your demonettes, your plaguebearers are all at 7, and then their other version is 8. So, like, if you have a hornblower, icon bearer, or a leader sergeant, it's 8 points. It man, I'm actually really impressed. So if these had been just a few points more, they probably would have been really, really bad. Now, the war gear, so your icons are pretty expensive. Well, it depends. So your icon of Nurgle is 1, icon of Khorne is 3, icon of Slaanesh is 5, icon of Tzeentch is 2, and then your instruments, the one that gives you the +1 to move and charge, it's just 2 flat across the board. I'm pretty sure these guys are competitive just because of the fact that you could bring 5 bloodletters for 35 points, then you could bring 3-4 horrors for, what is that, 12, 24, 48. So you've already got 9 models, and you've still got points to wiggle. And then, of course, your horrors turn into 2 additional models. So if you bring 5 horrors, that would be 60 points. That's probably too much. You'd probably bring like 3 horrors for 36, because that would be 6 models at the end of the game. You bring 3 horrors for 36, 5 bloodletters for 35, so you're at 70 points. You bring like 2 plague bearers, so that's 14, so 75, 80, 90. And then you could probably throw either a bloodletter, or you could mix and match. You could try and take out a plague bearer for a horror or something. But the reality is you're probably going to bring horrors, a couple plague bearers to sit on points, and your bloodletters to just run and gun your opponents down the table. I could be wrong about demonettes. You know, someone, you feel free to post in the comments section and say, hey, you know, I think demonettes are really good. I think they're better than bloodletters. That's fine. I just like the fact that the bloodletters have that negative AP3. Aggression. They come with two attack. Well, they have the zealot ability built in. Like, they just have so much value for 7 points. It's pretty nutty. And you can spend that 1 CP to increase their damage to 2, and then it goes to 3 if they roll a 6. Which, like I said, other than Necrons, like that could just ruin somebody's day, because your armor save is trash. You're going to take 2 or 3 damage if you roll high enough, and there's just not a lot of models that can stand up to that, especially if you're multi-charging. Say you charge like 2 bloodletters, now you're swinging in with 4 attacks, strength 5, weapon skill 3, AP negative 3. Like, that model is probably not going to survive. It's just, the odds are not super good. Your demonettes, you know, they're moving quickly, they have consistency at the cost of CP, but the horrors are really where I feel that good players are going to get a lot of value. You have to try and force your opponent to shoot them off the table, turning them into blues, then you can split off and go capture points, and now your opponent's probably going to be locked into combat with your bloodletters if they're trying to go capture points or kill the blue horrors. If a blue horror dies, then it still turns into a pair of brimstone horror model. So you have this consistency of a pink horror dies, you get a model. Blue horror dies, you get a model. And, you know, your opponent just has to keep on shilling out more and more shots and more damage to try and just knock these guys out. The nice thing is, for your opponent, you don't have to roll the injury chart. Once you lose that wound, you're just toast. But once again, you still have that 4-up, 5-up, and 6-up invuln save as you go, so you're never just dead. And that's something I think Games Workshop could have done. They could have said after, you know, your pink horror splits into blue horrors, you're stuck with that 6-up t-shirt save, but they didn't for some odd reason. You still have a 5-up invuln, so, you know, whatever, that's still better than a 6-up t-shirt save. But yeah, I like it. I think this gives a lot of flexibility for demon players, because you have, logistically, you have 4 models. Realistically, you have 2 aggressive models, so the bloodletters and demonettes. You have your utility horror, which you can use as a psychic shooting model, or you can use it to try and split off into capturing objectives. And then you have your tanky plague bearer, which, you know, it's same old. So all in all, I think this is a really good job from Games Workshop. I'm actually a little bit sad that the Kroot were not nearly as good, because between the 2 kill teams we've seen come out of the Games Workshop White Dwarf, demons are significantly better than Kroot. There's just no question about it. The Kroot are not super great. So maybe they'll fix that. Who knows? But this is an interesting play by Games Workshop. We all know that they're going to be using White Dwarf to have new profiles for armies so that they can sell the White Dwarf. It just makes sense. That's a, you know, it's a business move that we all understand. What I find interesting is that the White Dwarf has been very polar in terms of, is it good or is it not? Like, the first one, which was the Kroot, was like, oh, hey, we have Kroot, but they're not that great. And now, you know, many months later, we have the Demons, and it's like, whoa, these are, like, really good comparatively. So I guess we'll see what happens for the next army that gets a profile inside of White Dwarf. I would assume, this is a huge assumption, but based on the fact that they're pushing for Sisters of Battle to come out at the end of 2019, I would wager that those models are probably going to get a kill team profile inside of White Dwarf whenever they are released for the standard 8th edition. So, I mean, here's to hoping that the Sisters of Battle have a good profile. They're not going to be overcosted or underpowered, because that would really suck to have brand new plastic Sisters of Battle models that we've been waiting literally years for, almost a decade probably, depending on who you are. And, you know, it'd be really crappy if they're like, oh, hey, you know, Sisters of Battle are like, you know, 15 points. It's like, why? They're not Space Marines, Games Workshop. You know this. So hopefully, you know, Sisters of Battle are going to be in like the 9 to 10 point. See, the problem is they can't make them 12 points because they're not Space Marine strong. But you don't want to make them too undercosted, because you don't want to make them like 8 points, because they're still running bolters and they have a lot of really good weapon profiles. Because at that point, then why would you ever play Space Marines if you're going to have Sisters of Battle be so undercosted? So it's just tricky, because like, you want them to be playable, but you don't want them to be too overpowered and undercosted. But then it's just a really fine line for the developers to figure out where these models need to be. Because if you have a Sister of Battle, it's like 11 points. It's like, why would you, you know, it's the other problem where it's like, well, then why don't I just pay the extra point for the Space Marine that has a better profile? And as we all know, Space Marines are not very good right now in the meta. So it's like, okay, hopefully they'll figure that out. But, you know, good on Games Workshop for creating a very simple, what is this, six pages of content for Kill Team that's actually really viable. I think that the Demons have some really good competitive viability the more I look at them. And even if they don't, they're definitely good enough that they can hold their own casually. They're not going to get rolled over. I think this is probably going to be fairly new player friendly. With the exception of Horrors trying to figure out how to get them to get killed so they split, and get the psychic abilities off so they're as efficient as possible. I feel like this is probably a very new player friendly list. Like, you run some Bloodletters, you run some Plague Bearers, they're going to do what they do pretty straightforward. You're not going to have to try and stress out, you know, where do I go, what do I do, how do I use these. They're not going to be as technical as the Tau, because they don't have fly. So you're not trying to do all kinds of shenanigans with flying and charging and moving around the table. They're not super linear, but like, they're fairly linear. Like, a Plague Bearer is going to sit on a point, and a Bloodletter and a Demonette is going to try and get into melee combat. And then you have your Horrors, which give you that flexibility to be a little more offensive, a little bit more defensive. They can kind of go where you need them to go. And I think that's going to be great for, you know, players of all ages and all skill types. And, you know, the Demons are actually not too difficult to paint. They're pretty straightforward. I don't know, there's just not too much more to say about it other than I like it a lot. From a competitive standpoint, I think they have legs. From a casual standpoint, especially if you're playing a campaign, I think these are going to be a lot of fun. You do have to watch out for Imperium models, because a lot of them have bonuses against Demon models with the Demon keyword, which you do have, but, you know, whatever. If you're not playing, you know, competitively, if you're playing for fun, it doesn't really matter. You just have to be aware that this is something that we haven't really utilized, because we haven't had models with a Demon keyword very frequently. So, you know, just be aware of that. But yeah, I think this is well worth a purchase from your local or friendly local game shop. It's not, it's like $6-$9. It's not the end of the world. There's a lot of good stuff in a White Dwarf magazine to read. There's obviously, the pictures are beautiful. So yeah, I mean, you know, if you don't want to buy it, you don't have to buy it. It's on Reddit. You could find it anywhere you want. You know, if you're not going to play this list, probably just look up the pictures on Reddit so you can get the profiles and know what you're about to deal with. But if you are going to play the list, I would recommend, you know, pick up the Codex. Well, pick up the White Dwarf that has this. It's not going to cost you an arm and a leg. It helps your local game shop, supports your, you know, local scene, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, Games Workshop, you did a good job. I like it. All right, well, that is the end of this week's first show. Yes, I said first. We are going to be recording a second show, later this week, because A, I've been gone a long time, and B, it's going to be about Warcry. I'm not even going to lie. I'm so excited about Warcry. So we're going to have a second show sometime later this week, probably going to record it Thursday, Friday. We'll see. We'll put it up. But yeah, we are back to our regularly scheduled program. We're going to be doing weekly shows talking about Kill Team, talking about Warcry, because this is a skirmish-based podcast. Now, for those of you listening who are like, oh my gosh, I don't want to hear about Warcry, this isn't going to be like a Warcry-only show or a Kill Team-only show. This is going to be a majority Kill Team, like 90% Kill Team, a little bit of Warcry. I am going to be doing a spin-off podcast for Warcry. It's probably going to be like once a month, maybe once every 2 weeks. It's not going to be as frequent because I'm going to be playing both games simultaneously. But Squad Tactica has been rooted in Kill Team, and it's going to stay rooted in Kill Team, but it's still a skirmish based show, and we're going to talk about the other skirmish game, which is going to, you know, come out very soon. It looks like a lot of fun, and I'm excited to talk about it. We've got a lot of people who are interested in listening to that. So I will definitely preface Warcry episodes or Warcry heavy episodes for people who have no interest in it, and you can listen to another show. So I will definitely make sure to preface if a episode is going to be heavy-handed with Warcry stuff. If you're not interested in listening to Warcry content, that's fine. You know, the show is here for everyone to talk about games and goof off and have fun and do all that kind of stuff. So that is pretty much the wrap. Go check out the demon profile for Kill Team. I think, you know, if you're a demon player, you're going to like it. If you're not a demon player, you definitely need to respect it. You need to know what's coming at you. You need to know what these models can do so that you don't, you know, feed your opponent six free models if they have three horrors. And you're like, okay, I'll just kill the horrors turn one. Oh, yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. I'm going to send my blue horrors to go sit on objective points. And you're like, oh, I didn't want that to happen. That's not good. So anyways, that is a wrap of the show. Thank you so much to all of our Patreons, Battle Foam, Army Painter, Discount Games, Inc. Check out Discount Games, Inc. I have to give them a huge plug because I am getting all of my Warcry stuff from Jay at Discount Games, Inc. It has been so much fun to work with him because there's been a couple things I ordered. And he's like, well, I don't have that, but I can order this, but we can do that. Like, Jay has been so easy to work with and made my life so easy, whereas some shops, it's like pulling teeth trying to get an order set up. So, you know, email Jay at Discount Games Inc. if you're interested in Warcry, if you're interested in getting demons, you know, hey, I want to get some demon models. Where can I get them? Jay's got them at 15% off. If you need more demons and you want a bigger discount, email him and say, hey, Sugi sent me. He said something about a bigger discount. How does that work? He'll explain all of that to you. You know, they're just such an easy group of people to work with. I love it. So, you know, plugs aside, I am really excited to get back to business. The move went well. Family's doing well. Everything is kind of falling back into place, getting life back on track to a regularity. So thank you to everyone who listens, who hangs out in Discord, who listens on Facebook. Last plug, check out the Facebook page. We are going to be announcing how you can win some of these really cool tokens, cards, and thingamajigs that we're giving away. Also, keep an eye out for information on the Pajamas and Paintbrushes convention coming to you from the comfort of your own home sometime in November. If you're interested in participating, if you're interested in doing a class, you're interested in doing a seminar, just let us know on the Discord channel. We actually have a specific Discord category for the convention. So join us on Discord. I'll post the link in, you know, it's in the show notes. It's on the Facebook page. But we have a lot of listeners who do different things. We've got people who do terrain. We've got people who do dry brushing, people who do X, Y, and Z. And we've already had a huge outcry of people saying, hey, I want to participate. Hey, I want to do a class. Hey, I want to teach. Hey, I want to do these things. And then on the other side of the coin, you've got people going, hey, I'm new. I don't know how to do this. Hey, how do I do X and Y? And we're starting to connect these people together with the teachers and the students, and it's amazing. So if you're a student, you want to learn, come to the Discord channel, let us know. If you're a teacher and you want to teach, come to the Discord channel, let us know. We want this to be the most approachable and fun community convention ever. It doesn't matter who you are, where you are, what you're doing, where you live. It's going to be all about having fun from the comfort of your own home with the community that is absolutely amazing. And I am excited. I am just super excited to see what Pajamas and Paintbrushes turns out to be in November. So that is the end of the show. We will see you next time. And as always, remember to keep on killing them.